The Jumpians Portion, Chapter 1. Brikru thrust open the door of the Cray of Rud so violently that the fire in the central hearth belched cloud of smoke, while the candles on the long table in the dais flickered before he stamped into the hall, slamming the door shut and glaring around from under heavy black eyebrows before seeing Connor on the dais. The Cray of Rud, the Red Branch, was one of the three great halls within Awen Maka, the heart of the kingdom of the Ulaid, and attracted the fighting men and champions who protected the northern kingdom and punished transgressors. These warriors and fighting men in turn were mentored by their former champions, heroes still, veterans like Conal, Ferdia, Fergus, Brikru, and others of their generation, and older still, like Senka, the Druid. But now it was the time of the new generation of warriors and champions, and, despite his age and seniority among the veterans of the Cray of Rud, Brikru knew, they called him, the bitter-tongued behind his back, and refused to see him for what he believed he himself was. Conor Mac Nessa, the once boy king, looked up from the game of Fidakel he had been playing with Fergus MacRiach and warned. "Guard yourself," he muttered to his companion, "and keep a civil tongue in your head, for you know full well the bile that man produces." Fergus glanced over his shoulder and then shifted on his haunch so that his sword lay unimpeded by his side. Connor knew the noisy arrival of Brikru, while doing nothing to ease the ache he already felt in his temples and the top of his head from too much of the unwatered wine he and Fergus had been drinking. But hospitality demanded guests must be allowed to eat and drink before stating their business. But he knew what Brikru would demand. Satanta MacSultain, or lately called Cú Chulainn, the Hound of the North, had recently returned from a lengthy foray into Alba, and almost immediately on his return had taken forcibly to wife Ymir, daughter of the wily Forgal monarch. And there was much talk for what this would mean, for Ymir was from the southern kingdom of Lagan.
"And why wouldn't ye have a feast for your man? Sure isn't he just home here himself with his new woman, and how else can we build relationships and keep our brotherhood strong?"
Brikru demanded, knowing full well the old king's reluctance to engage in extravagance. "It would not be seemly at this time," Connor replied.
"Give Cú Chulainn a chance to settle down," Fergus chipped in. "After all, it's a new experience for us as well as for the Hound."
Annoyed by the old fool siding with the man who had usurped him, Brikru was more than ever determined to go through the plan he was beginning to hatch to sow discord among the heroes of the Cray of Rud, especially now that Fergus continued to belittle him.
"Well, look at here to me," Brikru said slyly. "If you lot won't have a feast for your man that all will remember, then I will. I will return on the morrow, and you can give me the honour of accepting an invitation to feast with me."
He pushed his cup of wine away and stood up abruptly.
"Until tomorrow, then."
"What do you think, Fergus?" Connor asked, glancing over at the older man. Fergus the Unwise, they called him, and with good reason, Connor reminded himself, after he had ceded his kingdom of the Ulaid in return for the favours of his widowed mother, Ness. That was more than 3 decades past, and the kingdom, under Connor, had prospered in the time, and Connor had grown used to listening to the older man's advice.
"I tell you this much,"
Connor sat up and spat into the fire.
"If we go to a feast organised by that venomous-tongued pot-stirrer, there'll be more of us dead afterwards than there would be to begin with. Mind you," he said, shifting painfully on the bench, If he wants to have a feast, let him build his own hall in his own grounds, and the expense of that might soften his cough. Breakroot feigned delight when Conor agreed to his idea of a feast for Cuchulainn and his newly claimed woman, Emer of Lagan. "And yes," Conor continued, "you may organise the feast, Breakroot, but you will also bear the expense, not just of the food and of the drink, but you must also provide a hall worthy of our Craeav Ruadh and our heroic warriors of the Ulaid." "Not only that," Fergus butted in, "you yourself will not be welcomed at that self-same feast you organise, for if you attend, I know there will be enmity and malice aplenty." Senja coughed and reminded Conor that he should insist on taking hostages, and Breakroot cursed silently at the effort it caused him to hold in his rage at this treatment. Leaving Awamaka, he immediately began to prepare for a feasting hall to be built at his lands in Dun Ruadhri. Remembering what Conor had said about the honour of the Craeav Ruadh, he determined to surpass the wonders of that building with his own great hall, fit for heroes. The Craeav Derg, the second of the great halls within Awamaka, was just a barracks for warriors, a place to store weapons and equipment always to hand. But this, Breakroot determined, his hall would surpass all buildings for heroes in the same way that heroes surpassed all other men. He smiled suddenly, a plan already formed for these prancing upstarts, these so smart, so-called heroes. They would be his guests at his hall soon enough, and he would see what they were capable of. The huge pillars of oak had been laboriously brought by teams of 6 horses, and the combined efforts of all the slaves was needed to position each of the central pillars into the post holes that the druids had arranged down the central aisle of the hall, while 7 strong men were needed to hoist each pole into the rafters overhead so that the roof could be attached. The long hall was split in 2 by a walkway, on either side of which were trestle tables and benches, while groups separated by panels of beaten bronze laced with gold swirls and interlocking circles, so that all had a space around the huge central hearth. Every imaginable aspect, whether it be shape, plan, embellishment, pillars and facades, portals and design, was such that the whole outshone its parts. Artisans had expertly filled the inner wattle walls separating the area, fit for queens, furnished with the cured furs and pillows, the benches draped with quilts and skins from the feasting halls for the men. A massive platform spanned the fore part of the hall, its facing panel studded with rich stones and the burnished metal of shields and naked swords. On that platform were the seats for Conor Mac Nessa, king of the Ulaid, and the leaders of the Craeav Ruadh, the Red Branch warriors, before whom all trembled. All of which Breakroot could easily look down on from the loft off to one side among the rafter beams which he had built, knowing that the men of the Ulaid would not tolerate him to be at his own feast. Making sure there was a full supply of food and drink, he set out for Awamaka to deliver his formal invitation. Conor was sprawled on the beach. Conor was sprawled on the bench, idly looking at the boy troop exercising on the sward outside the Craeav Derg, when Fergus nudged him, alerting him to Breakroot's approach. Senka sat up straighter and looked at the king inquiringly. They had discussed Breakroot's impending visit, and they all knew that nothing would suit the cantankerous man unless they all immediately responded with enthusiasm to his invitation to a feast at his newly erected feasting hall at Dunrudrigg. It had been more than two hands' worth of moons since he had first suggesting a holding a feast for the Hound of the Ulaid, and all attempts to delay the inevitable had finally stopped. But the Ulaid were still not resigned to going. Briquo stepped brace closer and looked at the faces of the men of the dais before looking around him scornfully.
"I'll tell you this much, and I'll tell you no more. But what with all the expense it has put me to, in not only its construction and victualling, but also in its style and grace, I'll be hard put out if the brave warriors of the Crave Road do not deign to honour my hall with their presence."
"We will need those 9 hostages," Fergus reminded him.
Briquo ignored him and continued,
"I will cause enmity between lords and men, between heroes and champions, if they would not come to my feast."
"Oh, Jesus, listen to him, Connor. Worse things will happen," Fergus pleaded. "If we go with him, it will mean mayhem. But we must go. We must go on our own terms."
Briquo shrugged. "I will cause enmity between fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, and even between the two tits of the women, until they are red, raw, and bleeding, and begin to grow hair and rot," he continued.
"By the gods around us," swore Fergus, "I would not attend this bitter feast, for I tell you now, there are dead without number as we accept."
If I may suggest," Seneca intervened, "perhaps, Fergus, you would reconsider if Briquo not only withdrew from his very own feast, but also permits a 9-man troop of your choosing to guard and protect him at all times."
Connor nodded sharply at the former king, and Fergus grunted,
"I only attend if you yourself, Briquo, are not present,"
before slamming his mug down on the table, sloshing some of its contents over his bunched fist.